I'd like to welcome Madison Plantier. Did I get your second name right?
Yeah, and it has different pronunciations, but that's fine.
Where is that name from?
It is French-Canadian. So very, very far back in the family. My dad's American. He's from New York. But his family originated from the French-speaking part of Canada, I guess.
Okay. Can you speak French?
No. Absolutely not.
Well, you're missing out something there, I guess.
Yeah. So many years of teaching as well. I think I learned French for 9 years.
9 years? Yeah, and you don't...
And I don't speak any.
You say anything?
Bonjour.
Okay. Let's move on. Right, I'm going to give you a quick introduction, of course.
Yeah.
Now, this was taken from... I wasn't trying to be creepy, but I went and sort of stalked you a bit.
Did you go on my LinkedIn?
I went on a couple things.
Oh, that is creepy.
Yeah. That is, yeah. Okay. So, Madison works for Qualy. We are obviously very happy to have you here.
Blessed.
You've done all sorts of amazing things. Traveled the world, China. We're going to talk about all of this, but yeah, we're going to talk about it all. But I think the thing with you that I find most interesting is that I found out that you really have traveled and lived in a few different places, right?
Well, no, I've technically lived in one place, but in lots of places within. I've spent a lot of time. Yeah, so I lived in China on 2 separate occasions in my life.
Okay.
So in 2 different places. And then when I worked for a travel company, moved about a lot then as well. I wasn't based in China then, but I did travel to a lot of parts of China. So I'm sort of well traveled in one country and then not really many others.
But in England, you did a master's in London, right?
Yeah. So okay. I did Chinese studies.
We'll get into that. Yeah. We'll get into that. Okay. Right. I want to take things all the way back to when you were just a wee lass.
Wee child.
I'm not going to ask how long ago that was. I'll say 21. 21 years ago, you were a wee.
Yeah, no, probably longer than that.
Okay, all right. So, of course, gaming is a big part of your life, especially working for a gaming company. What was the first console that you ever played?
That's a good question. I mean, we had a PC growing up and I learned MS-DOS. So we were talking about this earlier today, actually. So like the first game I think I ever played was called Teddy Bear Hide and Seek, which was on a PC. And I had to learn how to code as like a 5-year-old to like get to this particular game. Like I had to learn MS-DOS, to like type in the commands to get to it.
That's amazing.
But the first console we ever had was my cousin gave us his old N64.
Okay.
And that was like, that was, I think, because prior to that point, I didn't really... As a kid, you don't really know, like, gaming is, like, a thing. Like, it's a hobby.
Oh, yeah.
But it was, like, once I got the N64, I was like, yeah, this is something that I really enjoy doing. And it was something that I shared with my sister, but as time went on, became more of, like, a defining feature, I guess.
So you and your sister, did you play similar games, or did...
Yeah, we played a lot of, like, co-op games. I think the one I liked the most on N64, I guess, like, I don't think it's that controversial of an opinion, was Banjo-Kazooie. Like, that was my favorite N64 game. Okay. GoldenEye, obviously. Amazing.
Yes. Yeah, of course.
I think the other ones we used to play, the South Park game, my parents gave me that, and then like swiftly got taken off us after my parents saw what it was. Pokemon Stadium as well. I was really good at the mini games in Pokemon Stadium.
Okay.
We got really competitive. In fact, even now, if we break out like an emulator and me and my sister go on that, she suddenly gets really competitive.
Okay. It's interesting you saying about parents and sort of the age limits and finding out about the games. I remember I wanted to get the Matrix Reloaded, the game. I think
it was.
The
one on PS1?
It was two PS2. At the time. I think it got on PS2.
I think I had that one as well. Because you don't play as Trinity or Neo, do you? You play as like two of the other characters?
Well, I don't know.
Oh.
Because I went to my grandma and said, hey, please, can I have, I think it was £40 at the time. Can I please have that game? And she said, what rating is it, Matthew? And I said...
Matthew?
Yeah. And I said it was 16 at the time. I was younger than that. And she said, no. She said, you can have any other game, but you can't have that one. I remember just crying.
Oh, no.
For a long time. But she still said, you can have the money, just not that game.
You couldn't have bought it for yourself, could you? Because you weren't 16.
Yeah. So, but eventually I bought something else. I can't remember. The Sims or something.
Sims is also good.
Yeah.
But Matrix Reloaded was really good. Mm. Sorry, you did miss out on that.
Maybe I should play it now.
Yeah, you should. It is. Well, I don't know whether it holds up, but you can find out.
Yeah. Maybe there's an updated version somewhere.
Yeah.
Okay, so moving on from that into your teenage years, was there any game that really gave you a springboard into wanting to, I don't know, do things more to do with gaming?
Yeah, probably. So, like, I think So the turning point when I was young was the N64 and me sort of deciding that I really liked gaming. But in terms of like games that made me realize that I actually like, I don't know, it was a weird one, but it was, I had got an Xbox. So I was lucky enough to have a PlayStation 2 and an Xbox. I was one of those kids.
Wow.
We again, shared between me and my sister.
Okay.
I wasn't such a big fan of my Xbox, but I got Jade Empire, which was one of BioWare's for one of the earlier games, which is incredible. And I would like urge people to play it. It's been like modded like heavily now on Steam, and it's been like really beautifully upgraded. So it looks like not as old as it is because it's old. But originally it was an Xbox exclusive. My friend bought it for me just sort of as a birthday gift. Like a really generous birthday gift, because at the time, obviously, those games were expensive. I mean, they are now.
Yeah.
And I think it's the first game I ever played for more than, like, 4 hours straight in a day.
Right.
And was, like, fully addicted to it and, like, fully immersed in the story. And also the first time I think I've ever played a game well. Because, like, I don't know whether you remember this, but as a kid, I remember games being really hard.
Yeah.
And then I go back to them and I'm like, this is so easy. And I was just really bad at games, basically. Yeah. Like, as a kid, I just didn't understand really fundamental concepts. This is something that, like, always makes people laugh. When I first played Pokemon, I didn't realize you could have other Pokemon. So I played the entire game with my Blastoise. The entire game. Until I got to the Elite Four and I was like, this is so hard. How are you meant to do this? And one of my friends was like, you could use other Pokemon. I was like, you can use other Pokemon?
That's crazy. Yeah. I feel exactly the same. When I played a game, I definitely didn't know what I was doing.
Yeah.
And I didn't understand the intricacies of the different patterns and things like this.
Yeah.
You start to see when you get older.
Yeah. And like just the mechanics, mm-hmm. like you get told it in a tutorial and you're just like, oh.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Blastoise all the way through.
Yeah, but I just Blastoised my way through Pokemon. I think I had Pokemon Blue.
Okay.
I'm pretty sure I had Blue. My sister had Red. Yeah.
I did watch a streamer do it with just Venusaur, and Venusaur, Diglett, and something else that they could do certain things in the game.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I suppose you need the TMs at some point. Or is it, you were telling me, like, one of them can do everything.
They can do most things, they use, like, Diglett or something for dig and all those sorts of things.
Dig it in surf, I imagine. I think Venusaur can do surf, whereas Blastoise could. Yeah, I had other Pokemon in my party, and they had, like, cut and things like that.
Yeah.
I just didn't realize I could fight with them. Like, no, I just got to use Blastoise, apparently, always.
Wow, those games. I remember playing Pokemon games on long journeys. I'd get my Game Boy Color, pop it in, and start again. Even if, say, long journey, it's probably in like 2 hours, right?
But it felt forever. Like,
so that was really cool.
That's why when I got a Game Boy Advance SP, I was like, the screen lights up. I was like, this is game changing. Yeah. For like when we're traveling at night, I can still play the Game Boy SP without having to like lead out towards the window and try and like catch light on it.
Yeah. Right. So, teenage years, we're talking about gaming, but I want to talk about something else with you.
Oh, no.
I was reading.
It's terrible.
So I was reading an article about you of when you were in China, and it said around age 16, you can correct me if I'm wrong, around age 16, you became a dedicated cinephile.
Cinephile, yeah.
Okay, so firstly, before we get into that, I didn't know what this meant at all. So I Googled it. A person who admires or has a strong liking for China, the Chinese, or their culture.
Yes.
So first, I want to know, how did this all begin?
Well, it has a really sort of bizarre trajectory. So originally, when I was 16, started learning Japanese.
Okay.
And then my school, for the first and only time, because of how well the trip went, offered a trip to China. And I was like, oh, you know what? Close enough. So I went for like this 10-day tour. We ended up, the reason why the tour never redid this particular thing was because one of my teachers ended up destroying an artifact in China.
Okay.
He like leant on this like ancient marble table and it sort of a bit of it cracked off.
Yeah.
And then we did not redo that trip, but it was incredible. It sort of like really we did sort of the Forbidden City, the Terracotta Warriors, and like at the time I actually knew nothing about China. But I sort of immediately fell in love with the country. And from then on I started learning Chinese instead of Japanese, and then studied Chinese alongside my degree at uni, and that was kind of it, really.
I have something for you as we continue now.
Oh, no.
So as a dedicated cinephile...
You can test me.
I'm going to test
my Chinese knowledge.
I'm going to test your Chinese. So I've got here about 10-ish questions about Chinese culture.
And
everything to do with Chinese. And we're going to go through it, and I want to see how much you know.
This will be interesting. It'll either go really well or really badly. I feel there's going to be like no middle ground.
Now, when I was going through this, I honestly knew none of these. So we'll see what happens.
But you're not a dedicated cinephile.
Exactly. When I read that, I did chuckle.
Am I going to have to take, if I don't get these questions right, am I going to have to take that off of my bio?
You have to take it off.
Yeah.
Let's see.
I'm no longer a dedicated cinephile.
Let's say you have to just get above 50%.
Okay. That's good.
Right. Okay. Question one for £200. Can you name the dam and the largest hydroelectric power station in the world, which is located on the Yangtze River?
Yangtze River. It's the Three Gorges Dam.
Okay, good job, good job. Okay, round of applause from our audience. Okay, next. See, one thing I didn't realise too, pronunciation of these.
Oh, yeah, hilarious. Okay. I'm looking forward to this. Yeah. I'm going to enjoy this.
The city of Gangzhou.
Guangzhou.
That one. I don't want to offend anyone as well. If you're listening to this on a podcast, or I apologize. Was formerly known by what name?
Is it Canton?
It is. Yeah. Oh, my goodness. You are indeed a cinephile.
I am indeed a cinephile. 2 for 2 so far.
Okay,
question. Could go all a derail after this point.
Maybe, we'll see. Okay, question three. In which sport did Li Na excel at?
I think it's tennis. If I got that wrong.
It is tennis. You are correct. But let's go a bit further. Which opens was she a champion at?
Oh, God.
This is bonus, if you get this right.
I think she won the Australian Open. I don't know the other one.
Oh, my goodness. Yes, Australian Open and the French Open.
And the French Open.
Wow. I thought you'd get more
wrong. I don't know whether this is impressive now or sad at this stage. No,
I'm very impressed. Okay, question four. In 2022, what is scheduled to take place from February the 4th to the 20th in Beijing? So this is in the past now. Do you remember?
February 4th to the...
In Beijing.
Oh.
This year, beginning of the year...
Oh, was it the Winter Olympics?
It was. Yeah. So I suppose these might be more difficult, more recent, right?
Yeah, yeah. I'm way more like historical and like ye olde-y cultural knowledge.
Right.
But I remember the Olympics because there was this like big thing about this Chinese American skier that people were like obsessed with on WeChat. So all of my like WeChat feed was like full of this particular person.
What's WeChat?
WeChat is like Chinese WhatsApp.
Okay. Yeah. And are you still?
Yeah. I still keep touch with some of my Chinese friends on there. A lot of British Chinese people use it as well. So like a lot of my friends that are even based in the UK, I still talk to them on WeChat and not WhatsApp. Or like we mix between the two.
Okay. Talking about social medias there, you got WeChat. Is there any other thing that's different than here?
Yeah, massively. Because most stuff is like banned over there. So you've got WeChat is kind of like everything. Yeah. There's like Apple Pay mixed with like WhatsApp, mixed with like it's a blogging site as well.
Okay.
Then you have Sina Weibo, which is a bit more like Twitter. You used to have QQ back in the old days when I lived in China. You had QQ. That's owned by they're all owned by Tencent except Sina Weibo. And then you have like Youku and Bilibili are like the YouTubes.
Okay, I know the Bilibili.
Yeah, Bilibili's big for gaming.
I should probably know that for my job, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Right. Next question. Question five. What name was given to the network of trade routes which connected the East with the West from the 2nd to the 18th centuries?
The Silk Road.
Yes.
I have travelled on the Silk Road, which is why.
I mean, I've heard of it, but I'd never would have connected the dots there.
The two.
Question six. Beijing National Stadium is also known by which nickname?
The Bird's Nest.
Yes.
Yeah.
This is very impressive.
Thank you.
I know if you're watching this on YouTube, you'll see, but if you're listening, I am shocked and impressed.
I'm glad.
Yeah.
But also... I still feel like this is a bit nerdy at this stage now.
Yeah. I mean, you might get 100% of these 10 questions.
We'll see. I'm hoping.
Okay.
Otherwise, can I call myself a cinephile?
I mean, you're already...
All the wasted years.
Yeah. You've already got over 50%, so you're good to go.
Yeah.
You don't have to take it off your LinkedIn now.
Yeah, yes.
Right. What, located in the center of Beijing, was the Imperial Palace from 1420 to 1912?
The Forbidden City.
Yes. You're saying it to me now, like... You don't know this?
Well, I suppose if you were to say like the Imperial Palace from this date to this date, people might not know. But if you said like, what's the most famous place in Beijing? Probably people would be like, yeah, Forbidden City.
Okay. Yeah, I knew that.
Yeah.
Question eight. What's the literal translation of Hong Kong?
Oh, Fragrant Harbour.
Yes. You finally had to pause a moment though, and look back in the
Well, because I'm thinking in Hong Kong is the Cantonese name, and I'm thinking in like in simplified Chinese, it's known as Xiangang.
Okay.
Which means fragrant harbor. So I'm like going back in my head.
Jeez. This is very impressive. Okay, question 9. Name the Chinese philosopher, teacher, editor, and politician. He's already excelled themselves.
Yeah, he's poly.
Yeah, who died in 479 BC.
479. It would have to be Confucius, surely.
Yes, it was. Congratulations. Yeah.
I just think either Lao Tzu or Confucius, but we don't know when Lao Tzu died.
No, so we don't.
We do know this when Confucius died. Yeah. Yeah,
we do. All of us. Every single one.
Everybody knows that, right? Surely.
If you're listening to this and there is a place to comment, please let me know, would you know any of these? Because I'm sitting here thinking I've not got many brain cells.
Well, I think if you ask me any question about anything else,
yeah,
I wouldn't know it.
Okay.
My general knowledge is really bad. It's just a very specific set of skills. Like I know about social media, I know about games, I know about China.
Yeah.
It's like a weird mix.
Liam Neeson over here. Yeah. Right. Last question to get a 100% record. Which treaty was signed in 1842 to mark the end of the First Opium War?
Is it the Treaty of Nanking?
Yes, it is. I have to say congratulations. Yeah. Woo!
I'm very pleased with myself now. That is good.
That is crazy.
Money not wasted on my master's degree, it seems.
So you are a cinephile.
I am dedicated. Maybe even more than dedicated now.
So talking about your time in China.
Yeah.
Did you feel first like a tourist, and when was the transition for you?
That's a good question. I think, so the first time I lived there when I was 18, I stayed there for 3 months. And then the second time I was 22 and I lived there for 2 years.
Okay.
And weirdly, I think I eased into it a lot more when I was younger, but that was because I was teaching and I was much closer to the age of the kids I was teaching. They were like 14 and I was 18.
Yeah.
So they kind of like took me under their wing, and outside of me teaching them, they would take me shopping, and sort of there was more like a friendly atmosphere. And that's sort of very true of China generally, is this like a lot more like the relationships between teachers and students is quite a lot closer.
Yeah.
But then when I lived there the second time, I was still teaching the same age group. They were like 14 to 16 year olds. But because I was older and like an adult, I guess, there was more of a gap. And I think because when I was 18, everything was so new and cool and fun. Whereas when I went back, I was like, I'm living here for the long haul kind of thing. So it kind of came in fits and starts. Like there would be some months where I'd feel totally like immersed and like super accepted. I never felt like unaccepted, but there were definitely other months where I felt outside, like an outsider looking in.
Okay.
Particularly during like big festivals. So like Spring Festival is a big one where it's like their Christmas. So it's a big family thing and they all kind of, it's like a ghost town for like a 2 weeks. Like you can't see, all the shops are closed. You can't see anyone on the streets. And it makes you feel very kind of homesick because everyone else is doing stuff with their family and you're kind of separated from all that. Christmas as well was strange because like they put out Christmas decorations but they don't, it means nothing to them,
right?
So I came across like this giant statue of Santa Claus playing the saxophone.
Okay.
With sung, like he had like black sunglasses on,
right?
And they were like, yeah, it's the traditional Santa Claus. I'm like, is it
cool Santa?
Yeah, cool Santa.
Yep, Santa.
Yeah,
wow, that's cool.
Yeah.
And sad though for you thinking that they don't celebrate it. Do you have some pockets though that do in the same way that we do, or is it literally everyone?
Literally everyone, yeah, because they have no, and it really kind of puts into perspective how obviously these things matter within your own culture, but like cultures are so different that, and you have to, it gives you a lot more sort of like respect for other cultures when you're coming back to the UK, obviously, which is like a really multicultural country. Gives me a lot more respect for the people that do, first of all, embrace our customs, but also try and like maintain their own.
And
to be more conscious of the fact that like it's really the meaning behind these things that matters the most. Like the main thrust behind Spring Festival and Christmas is about family. Whereas the other ones, I'm trying to think of other Chinese festivals that aren't about family. Most of them are about family.
So you found that as well, that family was really the center of everything.
Of the culture, massively so.
And how do you see that differing than here? Do you see, is it a really great thing? Or are there parts of it where...
Oh, there are downsides, I think there's sort of like, you got the upside of this sort of like, you have this massive support network. Mm. Although obviously with the one child policy, it's not quite as big. Like you don't have such big families anymore.
Yeah.
But yeah, you have this sort of like strong sense of like support and like a base to go back to, and sort of money kind of exchanges hands very freely within a Chinese family, which I think in the UK is more abnormal.
Okay.
Like people, once you become an adult, it's like your parents may give you money sometimes, but they're not really going to.
Maybe at like birthdays.
Yeah. But then the downside of that, I think, is that children in China feel a lot more pressured by their parents to follow what their parents want rather than following necessarily what they want.
Okay.
So a lot of my students were like, oh, I'm going to be an engineer, or I'm going to do this, not because I want to, but because my parents know it's a good career,
right,
kind of thing.
Makes sense.
Yeah. So I think, yeah, it swings around abouts.
Right. Okay. So China obviously is a big part of, was a big part of your life, and you still speak Mandarin.
Yeah. Not very well though.
I mean, we had that stream where you were.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Where I did the bilingual skate stream.
Yeah.
That was tough.
Do you try and keep up with it though?
I do try. It's a lot harder now because with my previous job, I sort of had to speak it pretty much almost constantly. Whereas like now I don't really very often. Like I get asked to translate some things, but like as time has gone on, I'm using it less and less. I do.
Okay. One thing too that we probably will be doing soon is translating our videos like this. So either getting them dubbed or subtitled for different communities. So, hey, we may have to crack that out. Right, let's move forward now into social media. So I know you worked for some tourist companies and you taught English. And then you moved on to doing social media and looking after accounts for a while, right? What was the transition like coming to Kuali? What made you working in the gaming industry and thinking Kuali, this potentially is a place for you?
I think it was the work atmosphere. Sort of I knew from people living in Leamington and people that I'd known who had worked here that there's sort of like a really relaxed atmosphere here. And obviously you hear a lot of like nightmare stories about the games industry being like kind of really like a hot house and people being like forced to work like stupid hours and overtime.
Yeah.
So I just thought if I want to get into the gaming industry, this would probably be one of the best places to go because it seems like they do have a really nice work culture.
Mm-hmm.
And the fact that the PC and console division is new means you're kind of able to be a bit more experimental and you're working from the ground up, which is really nice. Like it's always, having worked at a small company before, is as much as like you don't get the stability, which you do kind of hear because it is still a big company, kind of the best of both worlds really. Like we get the stability of being a big company while also getting that kind of experimentation and like more autonomy of like a small company.
That's cool. And how is the, and you don't have to answer this because I'm here, but how has the team been to work with?
They've been great. Yeah, no, I love all of you guys.
Yeah, I can see the
very much
see the truthfulness in your eyes. Okay, so you've been here for, I'm going to say, a year, right?
It's been, nearly exactly a year now.
Because
it was like a year last week.
Congratulations. Maddie got promoted.
I did.
Last week.
Yeah.
Was it last week, this week?
It was, last week on Friday.
Now as a senior.
It was as much of a shock to me as it was to everyone else.
No. You had glowing reports. So everything's going great here, it seems.
Hmm.
Outside of work, what are you playing at the moment? And why? Is it a relaxing experience because we're so busy, or is it because you just really enjoy the genre?
You're going to laugh at me now because I've been talking about it all the time in the office. You keep making fun of me, but I'm playing Inscription at the moment.
Which game?
No one's really heard of it. It's not that big of a game.
Yeah.
You know, like not really a big deal. You probably won't know it. Underground, like only us really cool people like know it.
Right.
You can't even buy it on Steam. You have to like download it.
Yeah, the cool people.
Yeah. You have to go on a different website and buy it. I really mainly bought it. First of all, as a treat to myself because of the promotion, but partly because deck builder is one of those genres that I really know very little about, and they're so popular at the moment. And as part of our job, we have to assess whether or not we want to greenlight games. And I just thought it's like a weakness in my portfolio, I guess. And also, it looks really cool and spooky. I love like spooky Halloween stuff.
Right.
It's incredible. Like it's a phenomenal game. I'm so enjoying it. I've gotten very addicted to it. I understand a lot more now why people like deck builders. I think coming from a background where I played Magic the Gathering.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. That's probably the reason why I didn't like deck builders, because to me every game I came across, and this is gonna sound horrible and people are gonna flame me, like playing Slay the Spire, it's a good game, but I was like, it's not as good as Magic the Gathering. So many, it's like such a, but it's a very different kind of thing as well. I think deck builders as a video game are very different from TCGs in real life. And it was kind of getting my head around that. And I think Inscription has kind of helped me with that to understand that actually the joy of those games is getting to not trying to make them work for you, but getting to grips with like their unique mechanics, like what makes them a unique deck builder. So it's definitely made me want to go back to Slay the Spire and go back to like Book of Demons and those kind of games and try to engage with them on their level rather than trying to impose like my ideas on them.
Yeah.
Like, why isn't this like Magic the Gathering? Where's my mana?
Yeah, you've got to ride the wave of what they're trying to do.
Exactly, yeah. And be a bit more embracing of understanding that, yeah, not all deck builders are going to be the same. And that's kind of the point. Like, they have to have some kind of something like a hook.
Yeah. So we found out what you're playing outside of work.
Yeah.
Let's circle it back to what we've got on the cards coming up.
Yeah.
In the next year or so. I think we can talk about the stuff that's announced.
Yeah, we can, yeah.
So we've just had Scathe come out, and we've just patched it too. So do check out the patch notes and check that out. And then we've got other games like Die by the Blade.
Yep, Die by the Blade.
Robo Beat
is this is going to sound awful. We shouldn't have favourites. Robo Beat is my fave.
Yeah. And then we've got Space Chef, which was just announced.
Yeah, Space Chef very recently announced. Yeah.
And then Wildmender.
Wildmender as well. And I do love Wildmender too. To be honest, I love all of our games. But Robo Beat, I think, I never realised I liked rhythm shooters so much until I played Robo Beat. And I was like, this is a genre though. It's a combination of two of my favourite genres.
Yeah.
Rhythm games and FPSs.
Which is why you should subscribe to the podcast and the YouTube, because we are going to have loads of content coming out of all of our games.
Yeah.
And you can check them out. I think definitely me, myself, not playing these genres a lot, playing them here and realizing that there is something about them all and you should at least have a look.
Oh, definitely. And I think the big thing coming here as well is, like, I know we were talking about this earlier, I was so much more, even like as a gamer, TM, I only really played AAA games. I never really played indie games. Yeah. And coming here now and sort of playtesting games and having to play different genres and play around the space, like other games by other companies, I'm realizing just how much there is out there in the indie space and how much more experimental and interesting you can be. Like, games that you would have never made, Inscription would have never made it as a AAA game, because it's just too, not even simplistic, but it's just too out there as an idea. But it's so good as for what it is.
Which game? And
It's Inscription. Yeah, Inscription.
Okay.
Yeah. I don't know whether we've talked about it before. I probably haven't mentioned it, but yeah, Inscription.
Right. So two more things before I let you go. Yeah. One, and I think this is important because for me personally, it took a long time to even apply to a gaming company because I didn't really know that I could. Maybe I thought there was a barrier to entry in some, in terms of my what I went to university for or anything like that. So do you have any advice as an aspiring, let's start with social media, as a social media person for wanting to work within the games industry?
As a social media person specifically, I think the biggest takeaway I would say, and it applies to me directly, is like, don't feel like your skills aren't transferable. So like, especially with social media, I think, because I worked in the travel space for such a long time, and I thought coming here, I'm like, I have no experience in the games industry. Am I really going to be able to use these skills that I've developed? And you absolutely can.
Yeah.
A lot of stuff does apply. So when you're in interview, don't feel unconfident. Don't feel like you can't say like, yeah, I absolutely could do this job, even though I haven't worked specifically as a social media person within the gaming space.
Yeah.
As long as you can combine those two passions, so you understand games, you play a lot of them, and you understand social media and you use it a lot.
Yeah.
I would say at the very least have some professional experience with social media, but it's such a constantly changing space that that experience can really just be as short or as long as you need it to be.
Thank you for listening to our Quali Gaming podcast. And until next time, have a great, wonderful beginning of the year. Bye-bye.